Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This is the We Are Going Up podcast. We've got the Football League covered.
Hello and welcome. This is episode 123 of We Are Going Up. I'm Mark Crossy. Thank you very much for downloading. Cheers for the response to our Big Forest special last week. Glad you enjoyed. In fact, one man I'm sure enjoyed, or is enjoying seeing Forest struggling at the moment, is back in the studio, Jim Knight.
Hi, Mark.
Hello. Now tell everyone where you were on Saturday, mate.
I was at Turf Moor, watching my beloved Leicester City.
Did you have a decent view of that, Chris Wood?
Yeah, I was right behind it. So I was kind of directly behind the trajectory of the ball. So as it kind of flew in across a goal, we were behind that corner of the net. So yeah, we knew it was in as soon as he'd hit it, really.
Yeah.
It was that kind of thing where when you are in the ground, you see it and you think, that's going in, because you get the benefit of the angle.
Sorry, I had you faded down there. David Cameron Walker is here as well. Did you have a good weekend, mate?
Yeah.
Lots of stories from our weekend in Nottingham. We mentioned we were going to Nottingham last week that we just cannot possibly tell.
Absolutely, because none of them fit for broadcast.
Because our lawyers would be onto us if we could afford any. But a story we can tell is from our trip down to Millwall last Thursday.
Oh, yeah.
It was part of a special night all in aid of Prostate Cancer UK, the Football League's official charity partner. Myself and DC went along and we had a lovely time.
We did.
We met Zampa the Lion.
Seven bowls of sausage and mash.
He did. Excessive. We met Zampa the Lion.
Excellent man. Probably,
Well, not a man. Lion.
Say that.
But yeah, don't ruin the illusion. And I also demolished you at table football.
You did. A thrashing.
Absolutely thrashing. Destroyed you.
Narrowly avoided having to. What was the forfeit? The prostate cancer woman said, if you lose.
Is it like a FIFA apology?
10-0, you've got to run around the table with your trousers down.
Something like that, yeah. And Ian Holloway was there.
He got one goal. So
it was close. Ian Holloway made people cry with his speech.
He did.
Very, very emotional. And on Wednesday this week, on the hallowed turf of the New Den, we have a big game going on, which is Prostate Cancer UK versus an MP's 11. Dermot Gallagher is reffing. And David Cameron Walker is playing against the MPs. David Cameron Walker against the MPs. And who's your partner in central defence going to be?
Well, I don't know for sure, but scanning my eyes, there are 25 people in our squad.
Yeah,
high rotation. So yeah, it's going to be roll on, roll off. I'd be surprised if big Tommy Walsh from Ground Force, who's on the list, isn't alongside me in central defence. He could be the Vidic. I'll just sweep up round the back. He just get his head on everything. It'll be fine.
Where was Tommy Walsh when we were playing at Power League?
The old toe cap boots.
Yes. Well, hopefully we'll have highlights from this on the show next week. We'll tell you more about that.
It would tell you what, though, just on a very quick one, just on that evening, obviously Prostate Cancer were there and they were reminding everyone about the great work they've done with the Men United campaign. And I think it's easy for us, you know, we get we've had the guys on the pod, Luther Blissett, Don Goodman, and you think, oh, great, we'll speak to them. Oh, what's it for? Prostate Cancer? Oh, yeah, brilliant. Whatever. You kind of hear these charity things and you do them and sometimes they kind of just go by the wayside. You get fatigued by the amount of charities there are out there. And it's easy to forget, and it really hit home hearing Ian Holloway speak, hearing the chief executive of Prostate Cancer and the guy who was the Millwall fan, who was there as a Millwall fan who's had prostate cancer, and he's been a Millwall fan for 50 years, and he was talking about his experience. And you just forget how important it is, you know, just to keep on top of it, to make sure you're getting yourself checked out and to be involved with these campaigns. Because what they said, wasn't it, really hit home for me when we were standing by the side of the pitch last Thursday looking around an empty den, and they said of all the people that will be affected by prostate cancer, the men in this country this year could fill this ground 11 times over. And you just think, wow. I mean, it's incredible. It affects a hell of a lot of people out there and they're doing great work, so it's important to, you know, to support that.
Go
course.
Sign up for Man United.
Absolutely.
Coming up later on the show this week, we'll be looking at the current state of play, where we are with 6-7 games to go. Also look back on Peterborough's win at Wembley in the JPT, John Ward stepping aside at Bristol Rovers, Russ Wilcox breaking a Football League League record with Scunthorpe, and we'll take a closer look at the increasingly bleak situation at Tranmere Rovers. They drew 0-0 with Carlisle at Prenton Park on Saturday, a result that leaves both sides in deep trouble, just 6 points separating eight clubs in the fight to avoid relegation from League One. And how's this for a checklist? Rovers have won just four out of their last 17. They don't have a manager because Ronnie Moore is currently suspended and has just been charged by the FA on that betting investigation. And their chairman confirmed on Saturday that a proposed takeover has fallen through. So not a lot is going right really at the moment if you're a Tranmere fan. Paul Harper is a Tranmere fan, sports writer and co-host of their Totally Tranmere podcast, plus a presenter on Rover Radio. He'll come on later. But first, we're going to start in League Two, where one of the weekend's most important results was definitely in South Wales at Rodney Parade. Newport County 1, Portsmouth 2, a first win in 7 for Pompey and a first win for caretaker boss Andy Orford this time around, following the sacking of Richie Barker last week, who won only 4 of 20 games in charge. Saturday's result, coupled with defeat for Northampton, has moved Pompey 5 points clear of the League 2 drop zone with just 6 games to go. By no means are they safe though, and they've still got Northampton to play in a few weeks' time. Let's speak to a man who was there at the weekend and has been there throughout this tumultuous season, another one for Portsmouth. It's Steve Wilson, sports journalist at the Portsmouth News, and he's on the line right now. Steve, thank you very much for coming on the show. Let's begin with Saturday. Not a perfect performance by any means, and it was against 9 men in the end, but nonetheless, how big a result could that turn out to be in the context of Portsmouth's season?
Huge, to be absolutely honest with you, Mark. Under Richie Barker recently, it was hard to see where any kind of result was coming from. He came in and shored up the defence, made that his priority, but it seemed to be at the expense of any attacking intent, really. And it was, you know, the natives were getting restless. It's fair to say the board pretty much listened to the problems and the issues that a lot of the fans had. They didn't take the Barker from day one, particularly. But that win at Newport, Andy Orford has come in and just lifted everybody. It was a different feel about Pompey on Saturday. They looked a lot more free, and they had the opportunity to actually press home some of their attacking flair, which has been pretty much shackled in recent weeks. So it was a huge result, and it's just created that vital gap at the bottom that everybody was panicking about.
Steve, do you think this positive result on Saturday was down to the sort of traditional new manager, new regime bounce, or do you think Andy Orford and the team there can sustain this and guide them to safety?
Well, we've often sort of looked for that new manager bounce at Pompey. We've had enough new managers in this to be able to look for that. To be fair, it's very rarely appeared. You know, it's never been a case of change the manager and then you get an instant upturn in results. So I wouldn't put it down to that. I'd put it down to the fact that Andy Orford knows the club inside out. He's the academy manager, or certainly was until he became caretaker boss. And he just knows what makes the club tick. And that was one of the difficulties with Barker. He didn't perhaps get the Pompey mentality that has been borne out by Andy Orford, having spent, you know, since the late 80s he's been associated with the club. So I think that helps. I think he knows what makes the supporters tick. He knows how to rebuild that connection. And yeah, he came in and by all accounts he just said to the players, go out and enjoy it a bit more. Go and enjoy playing football. And certainly paid dividends from where I was sitting.
Was there a bit of fear in some of the performances then in the last few weeks?
Definitely. If you're asking me, you know, as an outsider, it looked like it to me. It looked like people were afraid to make a mistake. It looked like midfielders were afraid to go forward in case they were caught at the back. You know, I can understand it to a certain extent because there is a lot of expectation at Fratton Park. When you're playing in front of 15,000, which has pretty much been the minimum crowd this season, there's a lot of people wanting the team to do well. It's certainly not a bear pit where people are ready to jump on you if you make an error. But there is an expectation. And some of these players, you know, they've only known League Two and League One football. They're not used to playing in front of a crowd like that who urge you on as the way Pompey fans do. So, yeah, I'd say there was an element of fear, basically because results were bad. And Barker, just the way he set the team up, it was sort of almost deemed not to lose before you think about winning. So I just think that breeds negativity as you go on.
Steve, Andy Orford's not really had a lot of managerial experience. Obviously, we've spoken about the fact he is a Portsmouth legend. He spent a lot of time at the club, and obviously it's his second spell in caretaker charge. But is the job there for the taking if he was to, you know, take Portsmouth out of this spell and to keep them up this year? Is it a job that he wants, or is it something that the club are looking to give him?
To be honest with you, yeah. He was interviewed for the post when Barker took it. I think he was very keen to try and press home his own credentials for that. Yeah, every manager has their first job at some point, don't they? Jose Mourinho had his first job at some point. Sir Alex Ferguson had his first job at some point. I'm not suggesting Andy Ilford's quite in that bracket just yet, but you get my sort of point that it's all very well going for experience, but I've seen so many managers at Portsmouth. I mean, one springs to mind in Paul Hart that was a very experienced manager, came in at a difficult time for the club. It was almost like he didn't have the stomach for the fight anymore. It was kind of, you know, you just get a little bit beaten when you've been a manager around the block for so many years. It just didn't seem to happen for him. Sometimes you need a bit of fresh blood who haven't been at the forefront of battle all that time. So, I think Orford is going to get a little bit more leeway because he was club captain for so many years, and because he was part of a very good side back in his playing days.
Steve, obviously, it's gone very badly this year under Guy Whittingham and then Richie Barker. There were many people at the start of the season, you know, somewhat misguidedly, and we sort of said at the time, touting Portsmouth as favourites. But if you look at the players that have gone in and out, close to 30 players in, even more than that have gone out of Portsmouth this season. So, I mean, it was always going to be a remarkably difficult job for whoever was in charge this season with such a ridiculous turnover.
Yeah, well, I mean, the turnover has been the benchmark of what's been happening at Fratton Park in recent years. I mean, last season it started off with one team under Michael Appleton, then he left and Guy Whittingham came in, and it was basically a whole rip it up and start again with a brand new squad. And Whittingham, let's be honest, it wasn't an easy job. He was left with three or four players at the start of this season to then completely build a squad from with a blank canvas. I think he would admit himself, if you had him on the programme, that he probably made some errors with some of those recruitments. Certainly as goalkeeper, he didn't solve that particularly well from day one. But and the way that things happen, if you're bringing in new managers, they're going to want their own men involved. They're going to see certain players as the previous manager's player, and they're going to want to put their own stamp on things as quickly as possible. I mean, one prime example of that was David Connolly at Portsmouth, who's a quality striker who's played at international level, still scoring the goals for Oxford now that he's gone out on loan. Barker saw him as Whittingham's man, or certainly a threat to his position as manager, because Connolly wanted the job as well, and shipped him out as quickly as possible. Now, you know, he gave the reason that it was that Connolly wanted to leave, wanted to play more football, but to let a striker,
when you need goals as well, you're desperate for goals.
Quality out is just, I think it's just was foolish, to be honest. Sometimes you have to bite the bullet, even if you don't like a player all that much on a personal level. You have to realise what they can do for your team, and I think that was a huge mistake letting Connolly go. But that's symptomatic of the turnover of players. So many managers come in, people want different players playing for them.
So I mentioned at the start that the gap is now 5 points.
Yeah.
6 games to go. This is the running: Hartlepool at home, Dagenham away, Bristol Rovers at home, Northampton away, Bury away and Plymouth at home. So that's Bristol Rovers, Northampton and Bury all down there as well.
Yeah.
And that Northampton game could turn out to be huge, couldn't it?
I think so. I think it would have been more huge had Pompey not won on Saturday. Admittedly, it's a couple of weeks away and things could...
That's what I'm thinking. I mean, one win for Northampton and one defeat for Pompey.
But, I mean, if the key to that is that Pompey do not go below Northampton in the intervening games before they get to that point. That then gives them that little bit of breathing space to go there, and that you don't have to go and win the game. You can go there and draw the game, and then you can still keep that gap in place. For my money, I think Northampton are actually going to get out of it. I think Wickham could be the team in massive trouble to go with Torquay. So, you know, and the other thing is, it's not just 2 from 3, is it? Torquay look like they've got a huge mountain to climb to get out of it now, but it's not just Torquay, Northampton and Pompey down there. There's another 5 or 6 teams within sort of 3 points or so. So it's massively up for grabs in terms of trying to avoid it. So, I mean, Pompey will think, if you can piece together another win at home this weekend against Hartlepool, that will give them a massive cushion, and all of a sudden it will be another team looking over their shoulders with real worry, and it would really relieve some of the pressure that they've been under.
Obviously, you're hoping that Portsmouth, you know, retain their Football League status and stop the rot, as it were, and especially with all the turmoil that's gone on with the ownership and things, get back on a clean slate and start again next season in League Two. But if you were to slip down to the Conference, are there provisions in place now? Is that something the club can deal with? Obviously, we've spoken about the huge crowds, 15,000 still at Fratton Park week in, week out, which is fantastic.
Yeah.
Obviously, would make you a huge player in the Conference if Portsmouth were to play their football there next year. But is that something that the club can deal with financially? Can they deal with it?
I think they can deal with it financially, because I'm pretty sure even if they did go down, heaven forbid, if they did go down into the conference, I'd bet my money that you'd still be getting at least 10,000 people at Fratton Park next season. Possibly, you might be dropping down to 8,000 to 10,000, but that's still a pretty
still a massive attendance though at that level, isn't it?
Huge. The conference club, if they did go down, for my money, I don't think they will go down. I honestly don't. I mean, if you'd asked me a week ago, before Richie Barker was parted company with the club, I was in genuine fear. I couldn't see where a goal was coming from, let alone a win. But now that Orford has come in, there's been a real lift, a real positive change at the club, even in his short time at the helm. He's come in, said the right things. He's pressed the right buttons in terms of making that connection with the supporters again. And most importantly of all, he's got the players playing with that element of freedom and enjoyment again, which was so badly lacking in recent weeks. So to answer your question, I think they would be fine. It's not like they're hanging on by a brink in terms of finances now that since the new owners and the club is owned by supporters. We're not waiting on a chairman to bankroll anything anymore. It's properly run club these days. I'm keen to stress that, because I think a lot of people still under the misguided assumption that Pompey is still run like a ramshackle sort of barrow in a marketplace somewhere with a foreign owner at the helm. It's not like that anymore. They've cut their cloth. They haven't tried to overspend this season. They made a sensible budget on what their projected income was, and they're well within that from what I've been told. So if it should the worst happen and they should go down, I'm certain that they'd be in a position to deal with that and then come back.
Steve, I mentioned earlier about Pompey being the bookmakers and some of the pundits' favourites to bounce back to League One at the start of the season. But what were the expectations of the fans, and how have they changed as the season's gone on? We know the crowds are there still at Fratton Park, but what's the atmosphere been like among the fans? Has there been an understanding of how the clubs perform this season?
Well, it's funny, because it's changed as the season has progressed. I think very few people, other than the pundits and bookmakers from outside the club, thought Pompey were going to be favourites for promotion this season. I think that the average supporter, fair-minded, would have said, mid-table would do me fine. If we manage to get a dart at the playoffs at any stage, then fantastic. From what I was told, and from what I know from a lot of supporters I've spoken to, promotion was never going to be on the cards this season for the club. What was the worry was that under Guy, he lost some of the faith of supporters purely because of the number of goals that were being shipped in. When Pompey were playing well on their day, they looked like a match for any team. It could tear any side apart. There was a couple of really good, promising performances early on in the season where they looked like they were just sort of clicking into gear. But then these individual errors kept happening, and Guy almost couldn't find a way of solving that. And, you know, I think at some point, members of the board got a little bit carried away, thinking we should be doing better than this. We should be higher up the table, rather than giving Guy an opportunity to try and put things right. Now, for my money, I don't think Guy was the answer long term. I think he deserved an opportunity for what he did last season and for his standing at the club. But I wasn't convinced that he was going to necessarily lead the club back to promotion. Having said that, if they'd stuck with him, I'm pretty sure they wouldn't have been in danger of going out of the league either. So you see my point about how the expectations have perhaps changed over the course of the season. If you were to ask most fans, they were looking upwards for most part. Guy left, they were still looking upwards. Then this run of under Barker with 4 wins out of 20 games left them really looking over their shoulders. And most people obviously are now thinking, let's just make sure we're safe, have a look at it again in the summer and see where we go.
I've just been looking at March, but Portsmouth have played 7 games in March, which is obviously quite a lot, but they've only scored, I think, 3 goals in the whole month. So it's pretty obvious where the problems lie.
Two of them were on Saturday.
Exactly, yeah. And it's a bit weird because Richie Barker obviously did well at Bury, got them promoted at the end of the season when he came with 6 games to go. Did a pretty good job, I think most people would say, at Crawley as well. A decent-ish job before it all went wrong. And was regarded as sort of one of the bright young prospects managerially in the Football League. Any sort of reason why it didn't really click in particular, do you think? Or was it just a bad match?
Honestly, I've tried to think through this and work out exactly where it went wrong. My only thing is, it sort of drew parallels for me for way back in sort of 2000, 2001 when Tony Pulis was in charge of Pompey. He kept them up one season when they were in relegation trouble, started the next season and people didn't take to him. Pompey had a patchy start to that campaign and he was sacked. Steve Clarence came in. Now, Tony Pulis, I think, has proved to everybody that he's a decent manager in those intervening years, but sometimes a manager and a club just don't fit for whatever reason. It can be a personality thing, it can be a style of football thing. Richie Barker, I'm sure, would do well at another club if he should get another managerial job, but having seen his quotes recently talking about MK Dons, he's quite happy just with the coaching role at the moment. Whether that will change again in the future, I'm not sure. But as it turns out, one of the key things that probably let him down was that he never once, in the 20 games that he was in charge, never once came out and said, I need to take some of the responsibility for this, or I need to accept my part of the blame. There was always someone else's fault, the team's fault, the team's not good enough. Even to the point where he brought in 8 or 9 players and would say, these players aren't good enough to be here next season. Now, you wonder what sort of message that sends out. If you're signing those players and then you don't think they're good enough, then whose fault is it at the end of the day?
And I believe you got a kiss off Andy Orford on Saturday. Is that true?
No wonder you've been so complimentary about him.
Well, the story is that the moment he came out at the end of the game, it's obviously everyone jubilant, and I said to him before he started doing his interviews, I go, there's going to be a lot of people wanting to kiss you tonight, I'm sure. He laughed and said, maybe later. So, and then as it turned out, he did all his media duties, went off to see the chief executive, Mark Catlin, walked past me as he was going back into the dressing room and go, come on then, give us a kiss and grab me. So it wasn't quite as blatant as me going up and kissing the manager, trying
maybe,
to get a good
maybe,
story out of him, but it was a good moment.
Maybe both. More of that if Portsmouth stay up. And thanks for chatting to us, Steve. Thanks for coming on. Nice
no
to talk to you.
Yeah.
That's Steve Wilson, sports journalist at the Portsmouth News. You can read more from Steve on Pompey if you go to portsmouth.co.uk/sport. And next, from one relegation scrap to another, we're going to swap League 2 for League 1, and we're off to Prenton Park. So Saturday, as it turned out, was quite a big day in the fight to avoid the drop from League One. Only one of the sides now in the bottom 10 managed to win, that being Notts County, and they move out of the relegation zone, meaning that 8 teams are now separated by 6 points as we, in effect, enter a kind of 6-7 game season. Tranmere Rovers drew 0-0 with Carlisle on Saturday, which leaves them level with the Cumbrians just outside the bottom 4. I think it's on goal difference or goal scored, but Rovers have only won 4 out of their last 17 and only 2 since Ronnie Moore was suspended by the club, pending the conclusion of an FA investigation into a potential breach of betting rules. And as we record today, he's just been charged with misconduct by the FA. Alongside all of that, Chairman Peter Johnson confirmed on Saturday that he's not prepared to let the club fall back into administration despite a proposed takeover having fallen through. So plenty to discuss. Let's do it in the company of Paul Harper. Paul is a sports writer and the co-host of the Totally Tranmere Podcast Plus, presents on Rover Radio, which is a fan-run Tranmere Rovers radio station. Paul, thank you very much for coming on. Let's start with events on the field, if we can. That was a huge game against a direct relegation rival at the weekend, and one that Tranmere failed to win. Are the fans starting to get a little bit twitchy?
Yeah, you could say that, yeah, just a little bit. Yeah, it was billed as a 6-pointer, a must-win game, and unfortunately we didn't manage to do that. We had enough chances on goal during the game, but it was a case of really bad finishing from our part. When those chances came, we just couldn't put them away. And the performances have been a little bit shaky of late. We seem to have fallen deeper and deeper into trouble. And at the moment, it is looking like we need a miracle to pull us out at the moment.
And I mean, it looks like Tranmere were on the slide even before Ronnie Moore was suspended, pending the outcome of the betting investigation by the FA. He's been charged with misconduct this evening as we record. So, I mean, how much of an effect has this happened? This is, you know, seemingly worsened what was already a pretty poor performance from Tranmere, even when he was at the helm.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a terrible season on and off the pitch. You know, we've had Joe Thompson with getting cancer earlier in the year. Results have not been great all season long. We've been so inconsistent. It seems to be we win one, we look like we might be bouncing back, and then we lose one, draw one, and we're not really making any progress. And it was the same, like you say, before this betting investigation with the manager. And unfortunately, you know, things haven't turned around at all. John McMahon's come in, and really it's the same old, really. John McMahon was a good number two. I don't think he wants to be a manager first and foremost. He's just been sort of thrown into the role. Like I say, yeah, it's just a case that he's carrying on what Ronnie Moore was doing at the start of the season, which, to be honest, wasn't really working as well as everybody had hoped.
Well, it was last season, wasn't it, where Tranmere had a brilliant first half of the season. You were top of the league, kind of a sort of dropped down to mid-table. Why is it not quite lived up to last season this year?
I mean, I don't think the squad was as strong as it was at the start of last season. I think we started really well last year because everybody kept fit. We had a strong first 11. And then obviously we lost the likes of James Wallace and obviously Cassidy went back to Wolves. And those were two massive players for us, really banging form at the time and driving the team on. And, you know, Wallace got injured in just before Christmas. Cassidy left at New Year. And the wheels kind of fell off in a dramatic sense, really. You know, we didn't have the backup to replace Cassidy's goals. We didn't have that drive in the midfield. The season just petered out. And in effect, really, the season this time round has been just like the finish to last season. We've just sort of been so inconsistent. You know, we've had poor performances. We have had our injury problems, but I think the squad is strong enough to have done better than what we have done at the moment this season.
Paul, do you think that if Ronnie Moore hadn't have had this suspension and this FA charge labelled at him, do you think he probably would have been sacked by now?
Yeah, I mean, the season that we've had, it's been a poor season, and a lot of supporters have been, you know, calling for his head long before all this mess started. The fact is that when we were doing really well, we gave him a brand new contract for 2.5 years. Everything looked bright and rosy, and you know, 12 months later, and you know, that decision's looking a bit stupid, isn't it? But do you pay him off the 18 months? You know, we're not made of money. You know, finances are bare at best. So to sack him and pay him off would be a difficult decision to make. And I think Peter Johnson has just been in this sort of boat where, you know, we've hoped that things turn around because, you know, we did have players coming back into the team, and you hope that they can spark a little bit of a fight back. And unfortunately, that's yet to come.
Well, you mentioned the chairman there, Peter Johnson. He announced, as I said in the intro on Saturday, that this deal to take over the club has fallen through. How much of a blow is that, and sort of at this time as well?
Yeah, I mean, he came out a couple of weeks ago on the BBC and said, you know, that a deal was imminent, and you know, a couple of weeks, and it was a buyer who the supporters could trust, and who was going to invest in the football club. So everything looked, you know, fantastic. You know, new owners, obviously a bright new future, hopefully, and you know, all that's fallen through. So yeah, it is a bit of a, you know, dodgy ground off the field. Doesn't help with all the goings on off the pitch. And I'm sure that's filtering its way onto the into the players on the field as well. You know, the supporters just want the club to show a little bit of ambition and to try and move forward. And at the moment, it's kind of a stale feeling around the place at the moment. It's like a club that's not really going anywhere, not pushing for anything, and we're just sort of a little bit stagnant at the moment, really.
It is ridiculously tight down there, isn't it, at the bottom of the league? There are so many teams perched on 40 points or below, certainly even up to Colchester and the likes of those guys in 43 as well. Are the fans optimistic about the running? What's the kind of feeling in the club? Obviously, with this takeover news has been a bit of a blow, and obviously the Ronnie Moore news that we discussed already. Are the fans on a downer now, or is it still quite optimistic that you can pull yourselves out of this?
You'd be hard fought to find an optimistic Tranmere fan at the moment, I'm afraid. You know, everything seems to be going against us. You know, all the stuff off the pitch, and obviously on the pitch. You know, we've not had back-to-back victories all season in the league.
All season,
which is crazy. Yeah, all season we've not won back-to-back matches. I think our best one was about 5 games unbeaten, but there was three or four draws in there.
Well, listen to this, Paul. This is the running. Colchester away on Saturday. That's a huge game. And then you've got Shrewsbury at home. They're in the relegation zone at the moment. Then Crawley away, who, by the way, are having to play about 15 games in about 5 weeks. Gillingham away, another bottom half team. Sheffield United, who, and that'll probably be the week after the Cup semi-final, I think, or maybe 2 weeks after. And then you've got Orient away, and then Bradford at home on the last day. So you have got quite a lot of bottom half teams in there.
Yeah, I mean, with the 7 games to go, the next 4 are the big ones for me. If we can, we need to be picking up the bulk of the points from those games. Like you say, they're the bottom of the table side. So if we can pick up points against them and kind of pull the likes of Gillingham and Crawley a little bit closer to the drop zone, and obviously Colchester as well on Saturday, then that's going to be the big ones. I don't really fancy us to get anything against Sheffield United and Orient at the moment. So, the next 4 games for me, we've really got to be picking up, hopefully, 9 points. But like I say, we've not won back-to-back games all season. So to think that is a bit optimistic, to say the least.
That win that you got last month against Notts County, a 3-2 victory, looks absolutely huge in hindsight. Now, you'd be bottom of the league if it wasn't for that. But going into the running, as Mark says, so there are some winnable games there. You're looking at the squad and the players that could give Tranmere fans hope. Ryan Lowe, one of the best scoring marksmen in the division. Perhaps you'd be surprised considering the lowly league position. Obviously, there must be deficiencies in other areas of the team. But he's performed well this season. And, of course, Jason Kumas is there as well. How's he been?
Jason Kumas has been really good of late. Took him a while to get back to sort of match fitness. Obviously, he's not played for 2 years before this season. So it did take him sort of 2 or 3 months to get back up to the speed of things, but he's been really good. Unfortunately, he's injured at the moment, so really missed him last Saturday. But yeah, he's been instrumental in creating a lot of goals for the likes of Ryan Lowe. And Lowe's been absolutely superb. Can't underestimate the impact that he's
19 goals this season in a team who are fifth bottom of the league. I mean, where would you be without those 19 goals?
I would dread to think that we would nowhere be near the 40 points that we've got at the moment.
Well, you have got Jake Cassidy back there now, haven't you? And you've brought back John Louis Akparakpro from Bury on loan. Not sure that's going to help too much, but...
No, it's not. I'm judging on Saturday. It's definitely not.
Where are the goals coming from, though? They're not going to come from Ryan Lowe.
If they're not coming from Lowe, then you're really struggling. And that's why Jason Kumas is such a big player. If we can get him back fit, because it's his sort of set pieces and stuff like that where we can get goals, with free kicks, corners, he's superb. And you've seen a lot of sort of defenders heading in corners and free kicks to get us the goals. Cassidy's come back, he looks totally shot of any confidence whatsoever. He's not scored for a good 12 months at least. Well, he's got 1 goal for us in 12 months. So he's a player short of confidence. He's not really met the expectations that maybe we had when he came back, looking at his form forward last season.
Thanks very much for coming on the show, Paul. Great to have you on. Enjoy the rest of the season if you can. Biting those fingernails.
I'm sure that's the word I'm going to use, but yeah, thank you very much.
That's Paul Harper, sports writer, Rover radio presenter and co-host of the Totally Tranmere podcast, which you can listen to at totallytranmerepodcast.co.uk or on iTunes. Next, you know what's coming. It's time for My Club. We hear from another fan in 125 seconds, all to celebrate the 125th anniversary of the Football League. And today, it's the turn of Bristol Rovers.
This is We Are Going Up. My Club in 125 seconds.
Hello, my name is Tom Byfield and my club are Bristol Rovers.
So, Tom, do you remember your first trip to the Memorial Ground?
Blimey. Yeah, going back a few years now. My first game would have been at Twerton Park, actually. So,
okay.
Yeah, sort of about 93. I think we played Birmingham. And all I can seem to remember is Kevin Francis, elbows all over the place.
What was your most memorable Bristol derby?
We beat them in the JPT area final, 2007. Super Ricky Lambert scored an absolute beauty. So yeah, that would be a personal highlight.
I'm going to bring it down a notch because I always do this. The boys ask the questions about the good ones and I have to ask the questions about the bad times. Who's the worst player you've seen at Bristol Rovers in your time supporting?
Oh, blimey. All right, in the squad at the moment.
Well, yeah.
There was a player we had about 2001. I think we got relegated that season. We had a player called Musa Dagnogo and he was absolute toilet. I have never seen a worse player in my life.
So talk to me about John Ward. I was saying to the boys actually off air before we started recording the show, I only found out today that he's moved upstairs at Bristol Rovers to be director of football and Daryl Clark's come in. What do you make of it?
Yeah, well, I think it's the right decision, but weirdly it's at a very strange time of the year. I would have thought that they would have waited to see if we'd stayed up and then try and do something in the summer. But, you know, he's done well in non-league. So, yeah, we're right behind him.
And who's been your favourite player to wear the blue and white quarters, should I say, over the years?
Yeah, Ricky Lambert, probably. There's been a few. We've had quite a few strikers over the years, Jason Roberts, Jamie Cureton and Nathan Ellington and stuff, but I'd have to say Ricky Lambert. The bloke's an absolute legend.
And when he scores for England in the World Cup, that extra little bit of pride.
Do you not get that little sign-on fee for that?
Yeah. Do you not put that in his contract when he moved?
Tom, your 2 minutes is up. Thank you very much.
That's brilliant. Thank you.
My club in 125 seconds. We are going up. We've got the Football League covered.
Cheers to Tom. We'll have another My Club next week, and we need your help, folks. If you're a brand new listener, we're basically trying to get a fan of all 72 clubs on to do that, to do My Club during the season, and we're now exactly halfway there. We've done 36. We've got 8 shows left. So we haven't really thought this through, but...
You did a math.
Math. If you would like to help us out, this is how you do it. Get in touch if you support any of these clubs. Accrington, Barnsley, Birmingham, Blackpool, Bolton, Brighton, Burton Albion, Cheltenham, Coventry, Crawley, Crewe, Dagenham and Redbridge.
Derby, Doncaster, Exeter, Fleetwood, Gillingham, Hartlepool, Leeds, Mansfield, Middlesbrough, Millwall, MK Dons, Newport.
Or Northampton, Nottingham Forest, Notts County, Plymouth, Port Vale, Preston, Rochdale, Sheffield Wednesday, Swindon, Walsall, Wigan and York.
There you go. So if you support one of those sides, please tweet us at Wagyu Podcast or send us an email this week. wearegoingup.co.uk/contact. We need fans. Hopefully we could get you on before the end of the season. Right now, let's start our weekend review, shall we? And well, basically we've been in Nottingham this weekend, so I'm guessing you haven't seen too much of the football. The Johnstone Paint Trophy DC was on Sunday though, at Wembley, and it was a 3-1 victory for Peterborough, their first ever trophy, first major piece of silverware. Josh McCoy, Sean Brisley, and
is it a major piece of silverware? That's all I wonder when I was watching it. Is it major? It's sort of, I mean, it is good, isn't
I'll
it?
I'll tell you
it's
what,
a great
is it better than winning League One?
Absolutely not.
No, but the trophy's better. I think that trophy,
the trophy is huge, isn't
it's
it?
It's great.
Yeah,
I think it's one of the best trophies. It's much better than the piddly trophy you get for winning the playoffs. It's much better.
The 80 million quid, though, probably would make up for that.
Well, not in League One, but yeah, that's true. Darren Ferguson. So Ferguson basically is going to win a trophy this season. Yeah. Get out of the way.
First player to win it as captain and manager, I believe.
Yeah, scored for Wrexham when they won it as well. And Lord Ferg was there in the stands watching.
Is that what he's called? How are you calling him now? Lord Ferg.
Darren Ferguson said afterwards, hopefully today will re-energise us to reach the playoff final in May. The one thing we are good at is winning the big games, and teams do not like playing us in one-off matches.
As long as we play League Two teams. Oh, yeah. Really good at beating them.
But yeah, what did you make of it anyway? Good win for Peter, but we'll get a bit of confidence going.
Probably is going to be, as I say, probably a shot in the arm, isn't it? No matter who the opposition are, winning at Wembley in front of the passionate support and having that big day out can act as a bit of a catalyst. But as we've seen with several teams higher up the ladder, it can also act as a bit of a kind of, well, we've done our bit now, we've won the trophy, kind of take our foot off the gas a little bit, and ends up adversely affecting the league form rather than being a positive.
By no means a posh definitely in the playoffs, though. They're only 1 point clear of Swindon now. They have got two games in hand, but it's got a bit tighter there. They'd lost 5 out of their last 7 before Sunday's win. Chesterfield, I actually thought, were quite unlucky, really. They should have had a penalty early on when it was 0-0. And I think, in contrast to Darren Ferguson, Paul Cook said afterwards, we don't want to be back at Wembley. But they've got a little bit of a cushion going into the last few weeks of the season. 5 points clear with 6 games to go. They should get up from this position, shouldn't they?
Yeah, I think you do. I think you'd absolutely think that. And they have been one of the best teams all season. They've got some of the best players. And they've got the best player officially in League Two. So you'd be very surprised if they were to fluff their lines.
I know Adrian Durham on Twitter wasn't happy about him trying to get a penalty, thought he was diving. Probably just enjoy the win, Adrian. But anyway,
I think he is.
Okay, I bet he is. The Championship then. Let's start at the top, shall we? One of the standout games of the season so far was played at Turf Moor on Saturday lunchtime. If only we knew someone who was there. Jim, how was it?
Brilliant. My voice is still a little bit shaky. I managed to completely lose it Sunday. But yeah, it was fantastic. I thought we gave a brilliant account of ourselves. Obviously, the game was impacted quite a lot by Sam Vokes fell off the pitch and had to be to help to the bench.
Rupture of the anterior cruciate ligament. I'm sure we'll talk about that in a second.
Yeah, it's a huge injury.
But from a Leicester point of view, you're nearly
fantastic.
There. 7 more points and you'll be in the Premier League. As a Leicester fan, I mean, you've been we can joke about it, but you've been outside the top flight for 10 years now. Yeah. This must be a very special season.
It is. It's a special season, particularly after last year's debacle, which, as I said when I spoke to the Burnley guys,
Deeney,
that playoff win will forever haunt me, and I thought that would be the end of our challenge for us to the significant future. But it was a fantastic win, a great game, and
bizarre that you
brilliant atmosphere
didn't win against Yeovil bottom of the league and then beat Burnley second.
I think maybe we became a bit complacent with the back-to-back draws. I went to Blackburn as well, spent a lot of time on the M6 basically in the last 2 weeks. That was an end-to-end game, a game which really we probably should have lost by rights. We had chances to win it, but they were all over us the second half. So we were fortunate really to come out of those two games with 2 points, and I think that's just given us the springboard to go into these last few games. Hopefully get the 6 points, 7 points sooner rather than later. And then
Jamie Vardy going to be back?
Maybe he's gone for a scan today. So there's no official word on that. He isn't the type of player to hobble off easily. So that in itself may be a double-edged sword in that he may have done a bit more damage than we thought originally.
We were talking actually just off the air before we started the show about the situation there, because Leicester are playing away at Wigan on Tuesday night this week. That game might have taken place by the time you hear this. Then they host Sheffield Wednesday on Friday. Yeah. So you could be in that situation where they win those two games. They're all but up, but they need 7 points because on goal difference, they can still be caught.
Yeah, we've got a superior goal difference.
You're not going to be caught on goal difference, but they still can't put the thing up saying promoted. And then on Saturday, QPR or Derby could lose and you could get promoted by not playing.
Or draw, which I said to you would be a shame, because I want it to be in front of 28,000-30,000 people when we have our promotion party, or at least an away game like Reading or one of the games we've got coming up. But then you told me to promptly shut up and be happy that we're getting promoted. So
yeah, I think I did.
I'll take that.
Burnley then, they're going to be without Danny Ings and Sam Vokes going into this last run of games, DC. So their remaining games, I think the next four, a good game.
Winnable, aren't they?
Well, Watford away is tough, actually. Watford away, Barnsley away. I haven't said that. Barnsley have just won their last two. Middlesbrough at home, Blackpool away, and then the last three, Wigan, Ipswich and Reading. So you'd think that if they can get the next few out of the way with wins, that'd be enough.
I think they should have just enough, but the injury to Vokes will come as a concern. Ings isn't as serious. Ings should be back before the end of the season, but Vokes, you know, could be out for some time, and is sort of reminiscent of the injury Glenn Murray suffered for Palace last year after the fantastic season he had. And you're gutted for Vokes because, you know, Ings has got the headlines this season, but Vokes has been, you know, arguably just as important to Burnley. He's weighed in with a hell of a lot of goals himself. He's been a key part of their fantastic season. And if they go up, you know, he probably won't be back for the start of the season. And from when he does come back, things completely change. Maybe his place won't be there anymore. They'll have to bring in replacements. It takes you a while to get fit. It's come at a terrible, terrible time for him. But Burnley, you know, they've got to focus on getting over the line. Ashley Barnes, who they spent a bit of money on in January, is going to have to come in and do, you know, do his best to fill the gap that Vokes will leave.
The other thing about Burnley is that even if they do, you know, don't win a lot of those games, QPR have been so in and out, haven't they?
And I'm looking
at QPR's games. Bournemouth away next, who are on a great run. You've got Blackburn away, that's tough. You've got Leicester away still. You know, I think Burnley are going to get there.
Yeah, they'll be fine.
They're going to go over the line.
You said they play Watford next week at Vicarage Road, and Sean Dyche will get a hero's reception from the Vicarage Road faithful. You know, actually, even it's kind of partly because he's done so well at Burnley, I think, and it's gone wrong for us this season. People sort of, his reputation with the Watford fans has gone up even higher than it already was. Because in the early days, his fellas managing Watford, there were some dissenting voices. But now I think he will get a much deserved good reception.
Derby beat Charlton 3-0. Good way to bounce back after they lost to Ipswich in midweek. In terms of the playoffs, though, Wigan only 1 point from the last two games. They lost to QPR and then they drew with Bolton on Saturday. Late penalty save. Love a last minute penalty save from Ali Alhabsi. No, it wasn't Ali Alhabsi, it was Adam Bogdan. Sorry, I got the wrong keeper there. He made some good saves in the game as well.
Really confuse the two.
Yeah, noted. Nick Powell with a great goal for Wigan down at the end. You'd think that they'll get in the playoffs, so they've got a game in hand, haven't they? So it's going to be that sixth spot, isn't it? Reading have had a shocking week. They had home games. I was laughing watching the Football League show because Nigel Adkins was like, trying to take, you know, he's a very glass half full man. He could be in a car crash and come out taking the positives. They've played Barnsley and Huddersfield at home this week and they've taken 1 point. But he was still staying positive. But below them, look at that though. Bournemouth, great run. They won again at the weekend at Birmingham. Brighton are imploding, but they're still in there. Ipswich won. I didn't know they drew it all the weekend. And then Forest as well.
Some good news that has just been confirmed this evening as we record. Johnny Williams, who they've got on loan from Crystal Palace, a very highly rated young Welsh midfielder. He's played six games for them, has impressed. He was due to go back to Palace, but it has been tonight confirmed that he'll stay with them till the end of the season.
Great.
So that will give them a real boost.
They drew 1-1, actually, didn't they, with Forest on Saturday. Late goal from Daryl Murphy. 9 games without a win for Forest. Rumours, as we record this week, that they've gone back in for Stuart Pearce. I noticed that quite a few Forest fans, I know he's a club legend on Twitter, are a bit grateful it didn't sort of happen last week, but no, it looks like they could be going back to him. Any more on that?
Well, I think initially the contact, when the contact was made, it seemed to be that Forest were looking for a manager to the end of the season. That's certainly the deal that they offered Neil Warnock. And I think that's possibly what put Stuart Pearce off. I think if he was going to go back into management, he'd want long-term security. And understandably so, I suppose. And it seems as though that may be on the table now, which, you know, obviously will change his position and we'll see whether he'll take it. And it's not, as we said, you know, last week at length, it is, despite they're in, you know, in the doldrums and haven't won for ages, it's still a club that you take them over, 2 points off the playoffs, as we've just mentioned, Reading, Brighton, and then, you know, there are other teams there that are all stuttering towards the end of the season. If you can come in and just somehow hit the ground running, you could be in the Premier League within a month.
Definitely. Dreadful penalty, by the way. Just mentioned Brighton from Joe.
Yeah, oh, it's awful, God, wasn't it? Awful.
One of the worst I've seen this season. And Ian Hart, we should say, have a great goal for Bournemouth. 6 wins in 8 for them. Watford won 4-1 at Sheffield Wednesday. You couldn't bloody believe that, could you, on Saturday?
When we were in Nottingham at our old university reunion at the weekend, a couple of us went back to our old local betting shop that we used to do when we were at uni. We were all putting accumulators on. And I was advising anyone that would listen, don't bet on Watford today, lads. We've not won away since October. Sheffield Wednesday on a good run. Avoid us. And what do? 4-0 up.
Do you know the story that Stuart Gray wasn't there, though, because he was at his son's wedding?
Oh, really?
Yeah, so Sheffield Wednesday's manager wasn't there.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. Apparently, it was in his contract when he signed it a couple of years ago.
Smart
when he joined
guy.
The club as a coach.
The problem is that he's always going to remember that, you know, 4-1 defeat.
Yeah, good point.
The day's going to be tainted forever by the hammering he received at Watford.
Good point. Let's not talk too much about Chelino, because I'm sure we'll be doing it again at some point soon. But there was this phone...
You've heard it, haven't
you? Yeah, I've listened to it. It's been removed, actually, from SoundCloud today.
I'm surprised.
Yeah. Anyway, Leeds lost at home to Doncaster, 5 defeats in 6. Remember when they were all trying to get Brian McDermott back after they thrashed Huddersfield?
Yeah.
They've just lost practically every game since. Down at the bottom, let's talk about this. This is where it's happening. Barnsley, where's this come from this week? 2 big wins away at Reading and Yeovil, 7 goals in 2 games. Is the great escape on again for them? They're level now with Charlton.
Yeah, Charlton obviously have got a couple of games in hand, haven't they? Thanks to their cup run and awful pitch. But Barnsley are making a good fist of it. It was one of those clubs where you look at them and kind of down and out a little bit, similar to how we talked about Torquay, you know, in the show so far, and kind of cut adrift. But they've still got a game in hand over the two teams below them, obviously Millwall and Yeovil. So there is every chance that situation at the bottom of the table could change as well.
And they've also got the highest scoring player from sides in the bottom half of the Championship, 13 goals for Chris O'Grady.
And Dale Jennings has scored a few.
Dale Jennings has scored a couple of nice goals, hasn't he?
Yeah.
He's popped up.
That one on Saturday was a cracker. Millwall, though, we were there last week, as we said, and Ian Holloway's speech was inspiring and stuff, but they just threw away the lead twice on Saturday at home to Blackburn. And they had an extra man as well. Grant Hanley was sent off there. I have no idea why he was sent off.
It was
ridiculous,
an awful decision.
My weekly Millwall report from my colleague.
From Joe?
Yeah, from Joe.
He was there last week when we went along.
Hosting the Lions Live podcast. Said that it was actually, would have rather have been like on the receiving end of a 5-0 thrashing, because at least he could have come to terms with the disappointment earlier on. Like losing the win in the way that they did after twice going ahead and thinking, right, this is the result. This is the result that we needed. And then it's just back down to earth with a sickening thud. And it's just, you know, I think they are in big, big trouble. They just can't get the result to save their lives. Even if they do manage to score a goal, they ship them in at the other end.
That was a bad one against Birmingham midweek, wasn't it?
Holloway's going to have the task of being my manager on Wednesday. So,
Hopefully, I'll get a chance.
If I have a good game,
hopefully we'll be able to grab him for a couple of weeks.
Short-term deal to the end of the season.
Get him in there, Ian. League One. What a brilliant week for Wolves at the top. 6 points clear. Liam McAlinden scored his first league goal for the club. 1-0 win at MK Dons in front of almost 9,000 away fans.
That's incredible.
My head around that. 9,000 away fans. It was the largest attendance ever for a football match at Stadium MK.
Wow.
And basically, you had just sort of, if you looked at it, half that end sort of overspilling on both sides, all Wolves fans, and gin and nearly there. I think they need 10 more points to go up, and with Brentford and Orient dropping points, that was a bloody good weekend.
Yeah, I saw a few people on Twitter saying that the effect of the crowd on the referee, certainly to to send the player off, the MK Dons player, they feel they'd kind of influenced it a bit more than they normally would if they'd taken a normal amount. So maybe the, you know, take as many fans as you can to Stadium MK. You never know what you might get out of it.
Well, I'll tell you what's interesting, actually, because they're on 86 points now. They're going to go up, obviously. Below them, Brentford are on 80. Linley drew at the weekend away at Oldham, who are down near the bottom. Mm-hmm. Got two games in hand. Obviously, those are important. But then you've got Orient, 76. Look at that. Rotherham and Preston on 75 now. And Rotherham have got a game now and win that. They're only 2 points behind Brentford themselves. And there's now, staggeringly, a 17-point gap between fifth and sixth, which is a huge gap in any division at this stage of the season.
Remarkable, isn't it, actually? Absolutely ridiculous. Shows you how far Peterborough have fallen off since the start of the season, and also how well and how consistent Preston have been. You know, they've pretty much been, they, you know, there in those sort of two, fourth and fifth positions all season.
They've only lost five games this season out of 40.
And they've kept going about their business very well. An excellent job by Simon Grayson this season. But Rotherham as well, I mean, they're the team, you know, really on form.
15 unbeaten.
Then they've beaten some big teams around them, haven't they? They beat Brentford a few weeks ago. And as you say, I mean, it's not out of the question for them to get automatic promotion. They kind of sneaked it last season, didn't they? The League Two automatic promotion spot. They weren't really up there in the top three all season, and they took advantage of some other teams slipping up and got into that third spot, didn't they? On the last day. So who knows? They could do it again. I'd still say Brentford will probably do it.
Yeah.
But you know, Rotherham and Preston—they're the two teams you've got to watch out for in the playoffs. And Leighton Orient,
they're doing the tram miss.
To a lesser extent. They've had a brilliant season, and can they just somehow find, you know, they've had a couple of draws lately, haven't they? A couple of defeats, so that they've lost something, but they need to try and find it.
Well, they need to make ground on Brentford, and that was a great chance of Brentford drawing. They had Bradford at home, team with nothing to play for.
And Orient are a club that, you know, you get these chances to go up. I've spoken about this a few times this season, and you get these moments, and it's all well and good saying, oh, well, we might be in a good position, you know, we've got good players, you know, we'll try and keep the squad together like we did last season, but you just don't know. Look at Tranmere, you know, a perfect example.
Exactly.
One season to the next, you could fall off dramatically, and it'll be a great shame for them if they don't go up.
Well, if Peterborough don't win these games in hand, it could get quite interesting for sixth spot as well, with the teams below them gaining ground at the weekend, wins for Swindon and Walsall. Down at the bottom, though, we've kind of talked about this from a Tranmere point of view already. There's so many teams down there, it is ludicrous. The team that we've got to flag up, as I mentioned earlier in the show, winning at the weekend, in fact, winning their last three games in the last week, and not County. Only seems like 2 weeks ago we were sat here after that defeat to try and be sort of writing their season off completely, and just shows what a bit of momentum can do, and especially because there's so many teams down there, a lot of them will still have to play each other, which is a sort of double opportunity to make points. What do you reckon of the state of play down there, Jim, at the moment with Notts County outside the relegation zone now?
I'm struggling to put it just seems like put a pin in
what
it.
What are the bookies saying?
I'll have a look for you.
Have a look.
But you go high up as 15th with Bristol City, who have had an upturn in form under Steve Cotchell, but you know, they're by no means safe. You know, you've got Crawley, you've got all those games in hand, so that might play into their favour if they manage to get good results out of them. But there's, as you say, there would look like there was a team's cut adrift a few weeks ago, and somehow, against all evidence to the contrary, they've managed to pull out some consecutive wins, and those, you know, really exciting all of a sudden.
Those three wins for Notts County were against Carlisle, Crewe, and Colchester teams down there.
Yeah.
So it just shows the advantage of winning those games.
You know, as we talked about earlier, you know, when all these teams like Crawley and you know, Newport in League Two had all these games called off over the winter with all the bad weather, you know, there isn't a team down there from 15 that's played, you know, from 15. He's got Bristol City play 40, Crawley 36, Oldham 40, Colchester 39, Notts County 14. It's, you know, every team has got a different amount of games played down there. So it's going to take a few weeks for that to even out.
Only two goals in the last seven games for Carlisle, which is really, really poor. They've re-signed Gary Medine, who was obviously in prison, wasn't he? Sheffield Wednesday have got him back on loan, their ex-player, till the end of the season, which might help. Have you got some odds maybe for League Two?
Yeah, so Shrewsbury, Stevenage are both really, really short to go. They're 1-3. Crewe, 1-2.
They've got the worst defence in English football,
yeah,
Crewe.
Yeah, they have. Carlisle, who you just mentioned, are odds on as well, but so are Notts County. So, to be fair,
to go down.
Oh, yeah, there's five teams I'm looking at that are odds on to go down. So,
hang on a minute.
To be fair, the bookmakers don't know what's going on. Neither do we.
This raises a point I was thinking about this afternoon when I was putting some stuff together for the show. That why do four teams go down from League 1 and 4 go up from League 2.
It's strange, isn't it, of all the other divisions where you have... I mean, you can understand it more with the relegation from League 2 because of the conference. It's a completely different...
Yeah, I mean, I read that somewhere, that like because only 2 go down from League 2,
yeah.
4 then go up to League 1. Is that... I don't know. Weird. If you know the answer to that...
let us know.
Please do.
We're not clever enough to work it out.
Why is there one more team that goes down from League 1 than any other division than the Championship?
Why is it 4 relegation
and
places,
four teams... In the Championship and League 1, 3 teams get promoted. Why do 4 get promoted from League 2?
Why the 3 automatic promotion places and then 1 playoff? Which is why, in the same breath, that you've got so many teams' odds on
just
to go
send
down,
five of them
you've
down.
Got 4 to send all 5 of them
just
down.
Just send 5 of them down. League 2, let's talk about this. Now, in League 2, it does look like we know the 3 teams that are going to go up because there is a bit of a gap sort of established. Rochdale now, they look nailed on to go up, don't they? 9 points ahead of 4th place Fleetwood with only 6 games to go. Scunthorpe broke a Football League record, or rather Russ Wilcox did at the weekend. 24-match unbeaten start as a Football League manager. A lot of draws in there, but regardless...
Real draws as well this weekend.
A lot of there was, wasn't there? A lot of draws in there, but regardless, Scunny now 7 clear with 6 to go, going up?
I think so. I mean, as you say, sometimes, as you well know, Mark, draws, too many draws can be the undoing of you, but, you know, they have managed to pick up the odd win as well, and they were well before the last weekend, they won 3 on the spin. So, yeah, I think they will go up, and you know, a great job that Wilcox has done.
Fleetwood and Burton should be in the playoffs. You'd think they've got a 6-point cushion with 6 to go. Maybe not. And then it's really interesting. Southend, Oxford, York and Plymouth are a bit further back, but Southend, Oxford and York all on 59. Southend have pulled out a couple of wins when they needed it after that long winless run. And Oxford, I don't know if any of you've seen the goal that they conceded at Dagenham. It's basically a last minute... There's a shot from the edge of the box which hits the Oxford player, then rebounds into his own man, loops up all the way over the top of the goalkeeper in injury time, and that's 2 defeats in 2 games for Gary Waddock. And I spotted actually on Twitter on the Oxford, I think we follow like in one of the Oxford sort of Twitter accounts for one of the newspapers, and it was like, can the U still make the playoffs? And I clicked on that expand, and all the comments below.
No,
Not very good. What about down at the bottom then? Northampton lost 3-0 at home to Bury on Saturday, which was not what was required in their situation.
No, but they are showing a little bit of resistance, aren't they? If you take it back 7 or 8 weeks, they're in a worse position. As we're kind of...
You're yawning over there.
About Portsmouth. Sorry, Dave.
Keeping you up.
Sorry, lads.
Boring you a little bit. As we were saying earlier with Portsmouth, there are still quite a lot of teams who are down there.
There's loads.
It is. I mean, to be fair, the bottom two as well, you've got to think they've got awful goal differences as well.
Yeah,
Torquay,
if they escape from this, it's a bloody miracle. 7 points adrift with a really bad goal difference with 6 to play.
Yeah.
Northampton have still got to play some teams around them. Saturday was huge for us. Yeah. I think we should be... We've got a game in hand against Bristol Rovers on Tuesday this week, which might again have already happened by the time you hear this. But if we can win that, then we've brought in 2 strikers on loan this week who've both scored on their debut.
Who?
Hallam Hope from Everton and Danny Rose from Barnsley, Flitcroft's old club, both scored at the weekend. And if you watch Football League Show, that last goal is an absolute calamity from Northampton's point of view. I mentioned Bristol Rovers there, we are playing. The news this week that John Ward has moved to be director of football. He's moved upstairs at Bristol Rovers, and Daryl Clark, his assistant, has taken over, was in charge for a win at the weekend. And
here we go.
If you have only just started listening to this podcast this season, you might not be aware of this bit of audio I'm about to play. If you are, what a chance to reminisce and enjoy it all over again. It's from our League Two preview right back at the start of the season when we had John Ward, then Bristol Rovers manager, on the phone, and DC had a question for him.
And I think that's an interesting point, John, that you make there in terms of, you mentioned before when you said that the club needed to settle down and it's had a lot of managers over the last few years and it's been up and down and there's not been much stability. So bringing someone in like Daryl Clark, and you know, could you perhaps see one day him taking over maybe in a few years down the line if you continue to have sex and
slip of the... No, we can't do that.
Sorry, if you continue to...
That'll be one of the outtakes.
That's staying in.
Yeah, I'll pick up from there.
Yeah, we're pretty close, but not that close. You know.
Brilliant. Okay.
Starting the season again with a bang.
Yeah. So.
No, you can't say that either.
Okay.
Go on, let's calm down. Go on, try me again.
Do you enjoy that?
I don't think I'll ever, absolutely ridiculous.
Don't think I'll ever get tired of hearing that clip.
And I think it is still one of our most listened to things on SoundCloud. Right.
Oh, dear.
That is it. Thank you very much for listening this week. And, it's really exciting this time of the season. It's good. We're nearly there. About 5-6 weeks to go.
You were saying we're going to have a rebrand, weren't you, at the weekend? It was supposed to be the We Are Staying Up podcast.
Is it? Did I say that?
Yeah.
Oh, bloody hell.
Am I
going
to be allowed on next year, being as the old Premier League?
Actually, yeah. It's the price you pay,
mate. We are yet to have that discussion.
Yeah. Contract renegotiations are yet to take place.
Easy for you to say. Soundcloud.com/Wagyu podcast if you want to listen, maybe revisit that wonderful clip we just played and play it again and again to your heart's content. You can go to check the website as well, weargoingup.co.uk, audible.co.uk/goingup for a free audiobook should you fancy it. Cheers for listening. Good luck on Wednesday.
Mate, you're coming down, aren't you?
I am coming down. Is there any particular MP you're looking to take out of a 2-foot tackle? Have a look at the list.
I haven't seen the list. There wasn't too many notable ones.
You were saying that you played against them in a similar game a few weeks ago.
I played side against a team of MPs. Okay. Andy Burnham played, or I think is playing on Wednesday, one of the most high profile ones, and he was their best player, actually.
They put it on expenses. Expenses?
Oh, I don't know.
No? Power League bill on the expenses. Yeah. Topical. Come on.
Well, that's not exactly topical now.
Current affairs.
Good. I like that. A little bit of politics to end the show.
Unfortunately, Boris Johnson isn't good, which might be a good thing for me, actually, because he's given his past track record on a football pitch. Yeah. Cool.
Right. We'll have more from DC's match at the New Den when we speak to you next week. We're back in about 7 days' time.
This is the We Are Going Up podcast. We've got the Football League covered.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.